There were some who believe that while President Barack Obama had eliminated America's space program, as my next guest reveals in her new best-selling book, America's Space Program was, to say the least, in dire need of changing, updating, call it whatever you will, and you will agree after you read her book, too. But there were some, shall we say, powerful people who didn't quite see things that way. She reveals a state of the many elements of our space program, ideas and visions for change that she and a handful of others saw as priorities, those who didn't, and how space exploration went from being a race between countries to pretty much a race between billionaires. Her book is Escaping Gravity, My Quest to Transform NASA and Launch a New Space Age. She is the former deputy administrator of NASA, Lori Garver. How are you today, Lori?
I'm great, thanks. Nice to be with you.
Lori's website, the obvious, Lori Garver, LoriGarver.com. We have a link over to our page as well. As I mentioned, you are a former deputy administrator of NASA. How does one achieve that role in their professional life? How did you get that seat?
Well, my path was somewhat unique, my background being political science and economics and not engineering. But I had been working on presidential campaigns as a volunteer advising space policy issues for actually Hillary Clinton in the 2008 election, and when she was beaten in the primary by President Obama, he reached out, well, he was candidate Obama, to the Hillary advisors, and he'd taken some tough stands on NASA that hadn't been too popular. So when we were introduced, he asked me what I would do differently, and I told him. It seemed to agree with him because he asked me to lead the transition team for NASA, and then appointed me to be his, or nominated me. I had to get confirmed by the Senate to be the number two at NASA.
And the rest, as they say, is history, which you can read about in Lori's book. Which, you know, there's a lot of variables to it, a lot of elements to it, but by and large, what shape did you find NASA as a body in when you walked through that door?
Well, I had also been to NASA in the 1990s for about 5 years, and I think NASA is an outstanding organization. Human spaceflight was in a very tough place when I came in later because the shuttle was already planned to be retired in the next 2 years. There was no changing that, and the follow-on program was dramatically off budget and schedule. So human spaceflight was on track to have to launch on the Russians, to the space station, and we needed to find a way to get out from under that as quickly as possible.
Problem being that, I guess, old traditions die hard, set in stone, carved in stone, whatever you want to call it. The idea of change was not a welcome idea when it came to NASA, was it?
No, of course, change is hard for all of us, but especially in government. It's there to sort of keep things steady state. And at NASA, that's been a difficult challenge because we've been carrying the infrastructure costs of Apollo, and we haven't made a lot of progress in human spaceflight since that time. In the last 50 years, only the space shuttle and the space station, two human spaceflight programs, have existed, and that's because they're so expensive, the people who are doing them have no incentive to change, to do anything differently. So they didn't really want to give up their couple $1 billion a year to operate existing programs to try to lower costs. But as a government employee, I signed up to work for the taxpayer, and that's what I went about doing.
Was it also an issue, too, that the priority with that present-day NASA, let's just get the cameras pointed at us, let us have the flash and the dash, and really nothing is getting accomplished?
You know, human space flight in Apollo was to address a national need. And that was, let's show that democracies are the best way to advance society. And we ended up beating the Russians, and that was a soft power tool for the country. But since then, the NASA people did get a bit entitled, thinking, well, we can just spend money to put people in space because that's enough. And we weren't really tied to an overall national goal. So, yes, you could call them stunts. We've only sent about 350 people to space when I wrote the book since Apollo, and that's been at a cost of about $1 billion each.
Yes.
So that's probably not the best use of NASA's money. Or the public money.
Yes, to say the least. We're talking with former Deputy Administrator of NASA, author of the book Escaping Gravity, My Quest to Transform NASA and Launch a New Space Age, Lori Garver. Her website, Lori, L-O-R-I, LoriGarver.com. We have a link to our page as well. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. As you write in your book, you do still make the inroads, as like the old saying goes, step by step, inch by inch. What was the challenge of finding allies to get you the support you need and to move the ideas forward like they needed to be?
Luckily, I had been in the field for several decades, and I knew there was an undercurrent of people, not in the traditional community, not in the aerospace industry per se, but, for instance, there was a commercial spaceflight federation, and those people really agreed that NASA could help incentivize lower-cost innovations and get back to doing more important things that added value to the planet, the people on the planet in general. So I had allies at the same time the commercial satellite market was again going to be available for anyone who wanted to or was able to lower costs. And, of course, SpaceX, headed by Elon Musk, was the primary company working toward that. But there were others. Orbital Sciences Corporation got a contract with NASA to launch things to the space station. Boeing now has a contract to launch astronauts to the space station. And these will all be at greatly reduced costs from the space shuttle or even from flying with the Russians.
And, yes, Lori does write extensively about Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson. Elon Musk, I'm judging by your writing, Elon Musk seems to be, out of the three, probably the one that the most was resting on, the most you were relying on for. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. Both Bezos and Branson are investing in space companies, but both currently are only flying to low Earth orbit. To sub-orbit, not fully orbiting the planet. And that is of less interest to NASA. Those sort of tourist flights are not funded by NASA. SpaceX invested in orbital rockets and now, in fact, has a contract with NASA to build a lunar lander. So NASA's really counting on them.
It's said that Elon can be an interesting, that'd be a good word, interesting individual to deal with, interact with. Did you have to win him over to move things forward, or did he have to win you over?
Neither. That's what's fascinating.
Wow.
I am older than Elon, I think about 10 years, and I, in the 1980s and 90s, had been working with people who had these same ideas. When Elon came along in the early 2000s, we met in 2002, and we had similar goals. His goal had been shared by many to lower the cost of launching people and satellites in space through reusability, but nobody had made it happen. So I was hopeful. It seemed like he was on a good track, but he wasn't even a billionaire at that point, much less the richest person in the world. So what I think we both needed was each of us to be in a position where we could make a difference, and that ended up happening, me and the government, and him having created such an amazing capability with SpaceX.
Lori also writes about the social elements in and around NASA. And I'm thinking, maybe think back to the film, and I talked to the author who wrote the original book for what became the film Numbers, and the women mathematicians way back in the early days of NASA, even before NASA was actually officially formed, I guess. The NASA culture really is not just tough regarding change in programs, but tough in accepting change when it comes to people.
Yes, of course. Again, being formed not only in the Cold War, but really with military male test pilots as leaders, that continues. NASA has yet, over 60 years later, to have a female leader, as the head of the agency. We had, with the shuttle, 134 flights, and while two women ultimately became commanders, they each flew two flights, so that's four out of 134 flights that were commanded by women. So you can't really say, oh, the early days, of course, Apollo, 1960s, 70s, they didn't include women and minorities. We still got a ways to go, I'll say, before there is equity. I think the last flight was the first one where NASA had flown an equal number of men and women on the vehicle.
I think, you know, just NASA should just take a look at themselves and realize, you know, there's more diversity in Star Trek than there is in NASA. That's kind of a problem right there.
Well, of course, Star Trek is known for showing in the future that we can all get along. But as I note in the book, the original Star Trek especially, although I knew Gene and I'm a huge fan, objectified women, whether we were human or alien.
Yeah, that's also true. And again, you can make that reasonable to the times or reasonable to marketing, but as they, you know, it was what it was. But looking forward, it always helps to understand the past, and that's what Lori helps you do with Escaping Gravity, My Quest to Transform NASA and Launch a New Space Age. Fantastic book if you are a space aficionado. If you think you had things figured out, trust me, after reading Escaping Gravity, there is a lot of up until now unknown truth and reality that Lori brings much deserved into the light. Escaping Gravity, My Quest to Transform NASA and Launch a New Space Age, LoriGarver.com. Lori, thank you so much for teaching us how to better appreciate what we have and still the potential. That's so much potential is still to come with our space program. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.